Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to violence.
Welcome to Lost in the Static.
Hi, Josh. How you doing?
Did your voice just crack?
No.
Sounded like it.
No.
Okay. Well, this show is incredibly poorly marketed, but you can also go to adamandeve.com, which is quite well marketed, and use the promo code STATIC, right?
Right.
What do you get?
50% off of any single item, free shipping in the United States, 3 free Spank DVDs, and a mystery gift. How awesome is that?
All for using the promo code STATIC at adamandeve.com.
And you get a nice warm feeling that you're helping Josh keep the lights on.
And a lot of people haven't been doing that lately.
Meh.
So.
What do you do?
Well, marketing. Marketing can be a good thing. Marketing can be a bad thing. Marketing can fail miserably. Marketing can succeed tremendously. What are your thoughts on marketing in general?
I agree. What? You covered it perfectly right there.
All right. Well, we're going to look at some of the best and worst, and in some ways unique ideas on how to market movies, products, comics, ideas, etc. Yeah.
And marketing, it's something that a lot of people you obviously we think about advertisement because those are things that we see every day on the internet, on the road, on billboards, on TV.
Commercials would qualify as advertisement.
Right. And that's only one tiny little part of marketing in general. And it's the rest that a lot of people don't think about because it's not all in your face.
Well, and we have to include another word in this. Marketing and branding are kind of...
They're similar.
Right. But they go together.
Right.
Because you want your brand to be immediately associated in the consumer's mind with whatever it is that you are trying to get them to consume.
You want people to call it Xeroxing as opposed to making a photocopy. You want people... Kleenex is the perfect one here in the States. You reach for a Kleenex. You don't reach
doesn't
for
matter
a facial
what brand
tissue.
It is.
Right. You could have a big box of puffs there, and it's give me a Kleenex. In Indiana, where I grew up, every restaurant, you know, you go in, they serve Pepsi, you order a Coke. I'll take a Coke. I love this because you'll go and you'll say, I'll have a Coke, and they'll say, what kind do you want? You want Pepsi or Diet Pepsi or 7-Up or what kind of Coke you want?
It's just the term kind of is so ingrained into if you want soda, it's Coke.
Or pop, yes.
Don't get started on that pop shit. I hate when people use the term pop. That's just so dumb.
So anyway.
But what when you say, when someone says to you bad marketing, what's the first one that pops into your head? When you think of a marketing campaign that just backfired or failed miserably.
Well, it's funny that we should bring up pop because it was a pop campaign that immediately comes to mind.
Now he's just doing this to be a dick.
Yeah. And that was New Coke.
And see, I'll fight you on that. There is a very well-tenored conspiracy theory.
About the high fructose corn syrup?
No. That New Coke was actually a calculated move that was always meant to fail. Coca-Cola's brand was losing name recognition. And they thought, we can't just rebrand Coke as Coke. So we make New Coke. We get rid of this for a period of time. Drum up popularity for it, and then bring back Coca-Cola as the classic. There's a theory within marketing circles that was always how they intended. They never intended New Coke to actually take off. That this was always a calculated plan that pretty much worked how they planned it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how much.
There is enough evidence to suggest that there's enough questions that you can kind of go, I can see it a little bit.
I agree. I can see it. I can see where that theory comes from, but I'm on the fence about that one. I really am because, yeah, I see your point, but I don't know. There's not enough evidence out there for me to.
So you immediately go to New Coke with just not thought out.
Yeah.
Go into your reasons.
As absolute blunt, number one, this Coke was and still is, at least here in the States. I don't know about abroad, except maybe in Mexico and here in the States, Coke is, it's more than just a soda. You've got all of the products that surround it. You've got this rich history of over 100 years of this soda being kind of part of your life. There's a lot of people that have a lot of memories hooked in with that happy little red and white. And for them to suddenly go, okay, we're losing market share to Pepsi, because they were losing quite a bit of market share to Pepsi.
Not just to Pepsi. And I'll bring Dr. Pepper up in a little bit later.
Right.
Dr. Pepper was making a lot of inroads. And okay, I'm just going to diverge real quick. We'll get back to your Coke thing.
You and your Dr. Pepper. Go on.
But Dr. Pepper, do you remember their 80s, their 1984 to 1986 campaign?
Was that Be a Pepper or?
No. That was 70s, actually.
Oh, okay.
No, Dr. Pepper decided to try and hit the sci-fi market, where they had all those really expensive post-apocalyptic commercials where Dr. Pepper's the only soda left, or the not-so-subtle dig where everyone is drinking clone cola and Dr. Pepper is the one thing that stands out from the clones and all that. They spent a lot of money to go for that sci-fi campaign. This is right after Return of the Jedi, when Dune came out, Brazil. So you had a lot of these big dystopian sci-fi movies. They were losing market share to Dr. Pepper, who was really rising at that point.
And it was Dr. Pepper that really started the advertising in theaters.
Yeah, those sci-fi commercials I talked about, and I'm not trying to make a plug, but you can see all them if you want on my YouTube channel,
right?
As Rare Video Trader.
Speaking of marketing,
yeah, there we go. But but those actually ran before Universal movies, such as Dune,
right?
And these were $1 million to produce a 1 minute commercial in 1984. That was a lot. Nowadays, that's a couple of seconds of footage, but back then that was a lot.
Sure.
So Dr. Pepper was really, really rising in the early 80s. So right before Coke tried their disastrous new Coke, Dr. Pepper was also gaining on them. So they were not only losing to Pepsi, they were losing to what they considered second tier sodas too.
But yeah, so anyway, Coke was losing to these folks, and they said all that history, all that trust, all those memories you have attached to how we taste, gone. We have this new thing that tastes, I'm sorry, new Coke or
it
Coke.
It tasted a lot like Pepsi.
Tasted a lot like Pepsi. Coke 2, as it was later called, and then quietly moved off of shelves in the, late 90s, early 2000s, somewhere around there.
I thought it was later than that.
It may have been later than that. But anyway, it was just kind of why it quietly moved off of, and the Coca-Cola, of course, was rebranded Coca-Cola Classic. And now you don't see Classic on there anymore, and they're kind of like, It's just Coke, and it's always been like this. It's always been that way. And you know, the other conspiracy theory that I heard was Coke was made with natural sugar, and then they came out with new Coke, and suddenly Coke Classic comes back, and it's made with high fructose corn syrup. The problem is that Coke was made with high fructose corn syrup for a long time before that.
Right.
If you want Coke with real sugar and
Mexicokes,
I highly recommend it. The Mexican Coke, which they even sell here in Wisconsin.
Yeah. Every grocery store I've been to, it's not sold with sodas. It's sold in the Mexican section with all the tortillas and shit like that. So you actually have to go to the Mexican section of the store to buy a real Coca-Cola, which is kind of weird.
And they're good. I like them a lot. I wish they were less expensive than they are. But
see, before Coke got to that point, though, they had a real bitter battle going with Pepsi. And bitter. I can't remember what movie this was, but do you remember in 1981 when Coke pulled what might be the ultimate dick move, which nowadays you'd get sued over? Okay, Coca-Cola owns Columbia Pictures.
Okay, all right.
Columbia Pictures made a movie about, I think it was overthrowing the Pinochet regime, but I'm not sure. I can't remember if that's exactly it. But it was the good guy CIA agents going in to overthrow a third world dictator, okay?
Okay.
All of the CIA agents drank Coca-Cola. All of the third world dictator people drank Pepsi.
Okay.
So they associated in your mind, Pepsi's associated with communism and dictatorship. Coke is associated with freedom and good guys. That's kind of a dick move and genius simultaneously, isn't it?
I don't see the dick move part. I really don't. I mean, if you're trying to market a company.
Nowadays, you'd get sued. In 1981?
Not so much.
No.
Well, that was, you know, to counter that, too, sales of Pepsi skyrocketed after one Saturday Night Live skit in the 70s.
Yeah, and I you know.
Cheeseburger, 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 Pepsi, Pepsi, Pepsi. I'll take your Coke. No Coke, Pepsi.
You know. All I wanted was a Pepsi. I just wanted a Pepsi.
Pepsi, Pepsi, Pepsi.
No, the suicidal tendencies institutionalized. Mm-hmm. All I wanted was a Pepsi.
Yeah.
But then you also had ones that, I mean, like, when you see something, a product in a movie, where, you know, and it is kind of product placement, but after Risky Business came out, sales of Ray-Bans went through the roof.
Oh,
after they saw how cool Tom Cruise was in these.
Yeah.
Ray-Ban was not doing bad. And they were doing amazing after
right.
they, you know, so sometimes that licensing really can work.
Well, Ray-Ban's kind of, they went from a good quality sunglasses that were pretty moderately priced for the most part through the 70s and through part of the 80s. And then, like you said, Risky Business came out and Ray-Ban got elevated to where it is now. It's kind of up there with Gucci and the top tier brands, and they never really fell from that place either.
Well, you want to talk about another one? Let's stick with the early 80s here. Now, I do think this is a marketing disaster because, wow, did you guys just not have any market research? M&M's was approached to be the candy that lured E.T. out of the shed in
E.T.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They turned it down because they didn't want to be associated with a sci-fi movie.
Yeah, you know, sci-fi goes nowhere. It was just nerds at the time. And Reese's Pieces went,
sure,
put us in.
Reese's Pieces gained an estimated 66% market share within a month of E.T. coming out. They leapt over M&M's. And I bet some M&M executive was going, what the fuck? What, you turned it down?
Yeah, you know, I mean... Yeah, you're right. That was another one of the great blunders.
That was just, really? I mean, and they weren't even asking. Spielberg was only asking for, I mean, it sounds like a lot to us, but the relative pittance of $30,000.
Yeah, which is nothing.
Which was nothing to M&M's. And they were just kind of, whatever, only geeks watch these space movies. And but then that leads you into some of the blatant marketing, like Dr. Pepper fixing the hole in the ship in Mission to Mars.
Yep.
M&M's giving them the clue that they need to figure out the puzzle. You just kind of go, oh, really?
Yeah.
You're not even... Or when it gets real blatant. Do you ever see The Fallen?
No.
With
I don't think so.
Denzel Washington?
No, I haven't.
There's a scene where James Gandolfini, who looks fucking weird with a giant mustache, by the way. He just looks wrong.
Okay.
They go into a bar, and it just stops and becomes a commercial for one straight minute. Where he's like, just give me a beer. What kind of beer you want? Well, we've got Bud Light and Bud Draft. Why don't you get a Bud Dry? It's cool and refreshing, and it just becomes a commercial. And that, to me, is bad marketing. Because it's so blatant, it turns the audience off of your product. I don't think it makes them go, I wish to consume this beverage. It makes them go, oh, shut the fuck up. I'm going to a competitor.
But it depends on where it happens. Because you remember in Wayne's World, they did that whole spin-off, that whole satire of product placement.
Did you ever listen to the commentary for that?
No.
That was all actual product placement.
Yeah, I know.
So it was that to me was two-faced. Hey, we're making fun of how we will not do product placement while we're doing product placement.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it worked because, you know, people went, oh, well, wait a minute, Doritos or what was
Pizza Hut,
which
really
was
one.
Nuprin, the one, the little yellow different.
I remember that.
That sales of Nuprin shot through the roof after Wayne's World because people were like, oh, they're in on the joke. Well, let's support them.
Well, and speaking of like you brought up how Coke had name, you know, that everything was Coke. Same with Tylenol.
Yeah.
You don't ask for an aspirin. You don't ask for Excedrin. You just Tylenol. And somebody knows I need a headache pill.
Right.
You just say Tylenol.
And that, not so much anymore. You're right through the 80s. However, you remember the Tylenol scare?
Yes.
In the 80s when very few Tylenol bottles.
It was a targeted attack. Woman was trying to kill her husband, and what she did was she tampered with his Tylenol, but to deflect attention away from her, she went and tampered with a couple of other Tylenol bottles with cyanide as well, and she killed a couple of innocent people, all so they wouldn't look at her.
Right.
So they would think her husband died from some mass poisoner.
Right.
And she is spending the rest of her life in solitary confinement because... Yep. Yeah, you killed innocent people just so you could kill your husband. Wow, you cunt.
And ever since that, people don't ask for Tylenol. They will ask for aspirin. Also, the rise of an aspirin regimen to fight against heart attacks and stuff like that. It's kind of killed that Tylenol
name. You kind of have that with like even breakfast cereals, too. When I was growing up, it didn't matter whether you were eating Frosted Flakes or Fruit Loops. Everybody said, I'm going to get my Cheerios for the morning. They called it Cheerios. No matter what you were eating, everyone I knew just referred to breakfast cereal. That was your Cheerios. I'm getting Cheerios.
I was going to say, when I grew up, no, not so much. Cheerios were Cheerios. Frosted Flakes were Frosted Flakes. Alphabets were yummy. Golden Grahams were gifts from heaven.
Well, I mean, I don't hate Golden Grahams, but I mean, why don't you just sog them up? Why don't you just make them soggy? Because you've got a maximum of 60 seconds after they hit the milk before they're soggy.
You haven't had them recently. They reformulated their coating.
Oh, okay.
So they don't quite get. You're right. I remember 80s Golden Grahams. You're like, poor mush.
Yeah, you got to blah, 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 quick before it gets mushy.
Exactly. They've reformulated their coating. They're not nearly as bad as they used to be. At least they're not Captain Crunch, which will just scissor up the inside of your mouth.
Captain Crunch.
I do too, but man, you can only eat so much before it really hurts.
Uh-huh. But, you know, you've got marketing disasters. Before the show, you and I were talking about, I thought it was KFC. You were correct in that it was Popeyes. Do you explain what the Popeyes marketing disaster was?
Basically, Popeyes has been struggling for quite a while against KFC. KFC is freaking everywhere. Everybody knows what KFC is. Popeyes chicken came up, and people were even thinking, well, it's just another KFC, except for the African-American community who went, no, Popeyes is much yummier and different, and trust me. And
yeah, the Popeyes I hit in Milwaukee with when I was going to see our lawyer one time.
Yep.
All black neighborhood.
Yep.
All black people. And then I walk in on a 100-degree day wearing my trench coat.
Yep.
I mean, it was like the aisle parted.
I got to tell you, though, black people got that one right. Popeye's much better than KFC. Trust me. Popeye's came up with some new item on their menu.
I think it was like a spicy chicken tender or something.
It was the beginning of their Louisiana fast campaign. And they were trying to differentiate their taste from KFC. And so in the paper, they put in a coupon, bring this in, you get a free order of Louisiana chicken strips.
Yeah, because they want everyone to taste it and go, yeah, holy shit, this is good. I want another one of these and I'm going to pay for it.
Exactly. And, you know, holy shit, this is good. I'm coming to Popeyes from now on. Screw that KFC.
Right. It's like a drug dealer. The first taste is free, exactly, man.
And people were showing up with these coupons. And to the point that a true Popeyes fan would go, there was a case of one person that went and, you know, you put your 50 cents in and you pull the door down and you pull one paper out because that's what people do.
Supposedly.
Nope. He pulled them all out, cut out all of the coupons, put 50 more cents in, put them back in, took all the two coupons to Popeyes, and people were doing stuff like that. And
it wasn't just that. It was they also underestimated,
how
many people wanted a free piece of fucking chicken on the same, because it was only a one-day thing.
Yep.
So on one day, everybody rushed to Popeyes.
Yep, and they ran out.
Across the country.
Yeah.
Places were turning people away, and that, man, did that blow back up in their face.
Yep. I mean, somewhat. You still got your name out there. And you know what they say, no publicity is bad publicity.
I don't know. We had a Taco John's in Sturgeon Bay for a while, and when the health department shut them down for the cockroaches, I don't think that was good publicity.
I don't know. We're talking about Taco John's on the show, which, by the way,
and Taco John's doesn't exist anymore in Sturgeon Bay. They went bye-bye.
Yeah. But the ones that are around town are good. I love their potato olés.
Potato olés is Arby's.
No. Potato Olays is Taco John's.
Is it?
Yep.
Which one am I thinking of that's Arby's then? Potato cakes. That's
potato
it.
Cakes. Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
So anyway, but yeah, you've got that kind of marketing snafu where you underestimate how much you're really going to need. And that's not necessarily bad marketing, because you still got your name out there. You got a story in the local news. And in the local news, the story is, this shit's so good, so many people came to get it, we ran the fuck out in the entire country. That's how good it is.
Well, you've got the... I said I'd bring up Dr. Pepper again.
Yep.
Okay, Guns N' Roses. They made it Appetite for Destruction and Lies.
Respectable boy band. A lot of ballads.
And then they did the Use Your Illusion double album.
Right.
And then they were supposed to be making this album called Chinese Democracy. And they were supposed to be making this album called Chinese Democracy. And they were supposed to be making this album called Chinese Democracy. You see where I'm going? Okay, it took 17 years for them to actually go from starting the album to its release.
Right.
Well, they had a marketing deal with Dr. Pepper at the time. And I'm talking in the 90s here, okay?
Okay, still, well, obviously.
Dr. Pepper, after about 3 or 4 years of this album being delayed, Dr. Pepper, the president of Dr. Pepper, came out and said, you know what? If this album ever actually comes out, I will buy every person in America a bottle of Dr. Pepper.
I didn't get mine.
17 years later, when the album finally came out, he didn't back down. He's like, you know what? I said it here. So what you had to do was go to drpepper.com, input some, you know, code that, you know, hey, you know, I want my free Guns N' Roses Dr. Pepper, and then you could print out a coupon for a free one that, you know, a store would give you.
Sure.
They estimated they gave out over 6 million bottles in the first 5 hours.
Okay, that's about 20% of the United States.
The website crashed from so much traffic.
Okay.
We even did a story on it on 26. You know, one of those, it was a Saturday, so no, sure. Nothing going on.
Yeah.
We can't even at airtime get into the website because there's so many people trying to get their free fucking Dr. Pepper. So would you consider that a marketing disaster, that you had to give away a ton of free soda for a one-line boast you made 15 years earlier?
You know, no. I wouldn't consider that bad marketing, because they did it. I mean, he made the boast.
Oh, yeah. If they had said, no, I'm not giving away 6 million fucking sodas, no.
Right. And let's face it. I'm sorry, but a soda company as big as Dr. Pepper, they can absorb 6 million sodas. It's going to hurt, but they can absorb it.
Well, and like you said, it really got their name out there. And the fact that they did what they said they would, I think, made that a positive But it was kind of one of those... I bet when he made that boast, he never thought he'd actually have to follow up and go,
that's right.
Or go, oh shit, people remembered I actually said that in 1994 or whatever it was.
Well, you know, that's just another lesson of, if you say it, it's on the net. If it's on the net, it's on the net forever.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm still finding people requesting episodes of SaterCast. I'm still finding places that store episodes of SaterCast. I'm just like, okay.
Well, do you remember, now this you'd never be able to get away with today, but we're talking 70s here. Do you remember when Cheech and Chong Up in Smoke was first coming out? I mean, we were kids, but do you remember seeing the news about it or hearing about it?
No.
How they promoted that was they took fake joints. They just rolled, like, you know, herbs and stuff into joints.
With the
release date and name of the movie, and left them randomly at bus stations and on park benches and all over big cities.
Okay.
They just randomly left joints for it. You'd never be able to get away with something like that today.
No. No, I don't see that happening.
But that spoke to the audience Up in Smoke was trying to hit, though, wasn't it?
Well, sure. I mean, you know, if you want to get a pothead's attention, leave a little pot somewhere.
Exactly.
And actually, there are some states where I think you might be able to get away with it. Like
nowadays.
Like Colorado and nowadays, Washington. Yeah. And
well, you remember, now this one I don't consider necessarily bad marketing so much as really bad timing.
Okay.
Remember the Aqua Teen Hunger Force movie, Terrorism?
I remember Aqua Force.
Villains in Aqua Teen Hunger Force is those space invaders, Atari-looking aliens that give you the finger?
Yes.
Well, this was right after the terrorism scares post-2001.
Okay.
And they hired guerrilla marketing to go and take these, like, light-up signs.
Oh, that's right.
And so all of a sudden, these people are just attaching things underneath bridges and stuff with wires hanging out of them.
Yes.
And that got a lot of police attention, and that wasn't the attention Cartoon Network wanted.
I do remember that now, and I remember us doing it. That was another thing that we did a story on, going, hey, it's okay, they're just signs.
Well, and I would think, I mean, technically, it's a little early 80s animated video game character giving you the finger.
Yeah.
Is that, you're really going to take the time to meld that into a bomb?
Duh.
You know, it just seems kind of like a waste of effort.
But, I mean, there, you know, another bit of genius move, and you can see pictures of this on the internet. 3M makes a safety glass. Bulletproof, shatterproof, you know, everything proof safety glass.
Okay.
They took $1 million in cash. Just stacks of 10,000 or whatever, made a case, both sides of which were 3M safety glass. Put the cash in, put the safety glass up, and said, if you can break it, you can keep it. And they have video of throngs of people trying to break this safety glass. And no one ever did.
Well, on that note, do you remember the, I can't remember the specific company it was, but I know the RIAA got involved, so it was probably CD rather than DVD.
Okay.
Going to boasting like that, like if you can do it, you can keep it. There was a company in the early 2000s that came out with a new kind of copy protection on CDs. And they said, it is so advanced, it is unbreakable. And they said on their website, if you're able to circumvent our copy protection and copy this CD, then we will give you $10,000 and a job at our company.
That was Sony.
Was it Sony?
That was Sony. I remember. Within one week,
somebody did it.
Yep.
And rather than giving them the job and the $10,000 that they offered,
they took him to court.
They took him to court saying, you circumvented our technology. The judge finally threw it out going, actually, no, you asked him to do it. Therefore, what you're suing over is entrapment.
Right.
You can't say, hey, do this for us. Okay, you did that. Now you broke the law.
Right.
But that, to me, is a real dick move on the company's part. Go,
I agree.
Really, you fucking assholes? Because first of all, if you're boasting, unbreakable copy protection, motherfuckers, and somebody breaks it, be a man. Don't go, lawsuit.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that was Sony. That was their rootkits, and that was a flash in the pan. That was the beginning and end of rootkits right then and there. And now, what happened with that guy once they threw it out of court? I cannot remember his name to save my life, but there was a malware anti-malware company. I forget which one, but they hired him and said, "All right, fine, come up with a little rootkit removal for our program." And now I think he still works for that company. And I think it was Norton. I know it wasn't McAfee, but it was one of the big ones.
Well,
but
let's stick in the kind of piracy realm then. This one you cannot consider positive. Even, you know, I don't even think you're going to be able to spin it because they lost so much for this. Metallica suing all their own fans for being their fans.
Yeah.
And I don't think you can spin that into any publicity's good publicity because their attendance at concerts and their record sales have never, well, they didn't tank, but they've never gone back to where they were pre-Napster suing. Maybe that's due to the, you know, people don't like the music anymore. I mean, everyone complains about how the new albums suck, but there's also the fact that when you sue all your own fans for being your fans,
yeah,
how do you expect to retain those fans? That to me is a marketing disaster, even though it was not meant to be marketing. It was.
I think the way Metallica was thinking was, well, we don't want, these are pirates. These are guys that are stealing our music. We don't want them as fans. That was their justification. They were wrong. They were idiots and short-sighted.
Their justification on the record was
fire bad.
Everybody who listens to our music should pay for it.
Right.
No one should be able to listen to it without paying for it.
Yeah.
And that is just not only greed, but just monstrous ego.
Oh, yeah.
And then to find out that Lars Ulrich uses Pirate Bay just is the icing. He was at a party, a Hollywood party, and multiple people told the same story with, you know, just very slightly varying details. So it's probably relatively credible. He wanted to let somebody listen to, you know, some new band he was listening to since he's at someone else's house, doesn't have the CD. He goes on Pirate Bay and downloads it for
him.
There
you go.
And you just go, you know what, Lars Ulrich, you are everything that is wrong with a fucking rock star. You are the reason I refuse to ever listen to Metallica again. You are an egotistical, greedy fuckbag.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, I will never endorse Metallica again. So, and I used to like them.
Now, there has been a rise, you know, when we talk about marketing, I think some of the marketing, some of the best marketing in the world is marketing that you don't know is marketing. It's just something that catches you.
Gorilla.
Yeah. Well, gorilla is one word for it. There are movie companies now that are coming up with websites that use real world locations and stuff like that. And real world problems, and you know, if you win, you get a free pass to the movie or something like that. But there are websites that you have no idea. Like, I love bees,
and everybody that
got into that one knows that I love bees. I forget what movie it was marketing, so fail there. But
I think it wasn't it the bee movie with Jerry Seinfeld?
No. It had nothing to do with bees. It was a sci-fi movie. But, you know, I have always been impressed, and I think that that is kind of the next move in marketing is the sneaky marketing. The stuff where we're just going to place this little seed, get you curious, and have you do the work.
And I think there was one movie, and I hate the film, but there was one movie that did that more brilliantly than anyone else.
Okay.
For one thing, they did it at just the right time, right when this new technology was really taking hold of American homes, and that was the Blair Witch Project. The way they had their website set up, like it was a real website, the marketing, they had viral marketing even before we had, you know, viral marketing. Sure. The way they marketed that movie as a true story when it was completely fictional, I think Blair Witch Project was brilliant marketing. Too bad the movie was fucking terrible, but I think Blair Witch Project was brilliant marketing.
Yeah.
Okay, now you want to talk about totally misunderstanding your audience for marketing.
Okay.
Recently, I believe it was writer David Pace said his day job is he works for like a marketing company, and he was getting a presentation of some new things that they're going to try to do to market theatrical movies. And he's listening to their presentation of some of the, you know, some of the people who, you know, his company's going to buy from.
Sure.
What they want to do is during a movie, we're going to text questions about the movie. You know, like, you know, you're 20 minutes into the movie, we're going to ask you something that happened at the 15-minute mark. We're going to send it to your cell phone. And we want people to answer back. And if you get like five right, then you get a free popcorn. He's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. you're going to do this during the movie. Yeah. To their cell phone. Yeah. And he's just like, did you think this through at all?
They're going to get kicked out of the theater if anything.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's what he's like. You didn't think this through, did you? Because a lot of theaters nowadays, that cell phone comes on, your ass gets ejected.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, I'm sorry, that's just dumb.
Yep.
Dumb movie marketing, isn't it?
Yes. And actually, I hate to say it, but I've had that. Last time, I forget what the hell movie we went to see in a theater, but I went with Dawn and her sister and a couple other girls because it was some girly flick. And, you know, me being husband got roped into it. So we go to the theater, and I'm in there, and I have this app on my iPod called I Gotta Pee. And you hit I Gotta Pee, and you input the movie, and it has times in the movie where it says, okay, from here to here, nothing important happens, go pee. So
did it say basically from minute 2 to minute 129?
Well, it knew that I was male, so yeah, that's kind of what it said. But I just said, you know, I've fired up this app before in the movie theater, and I had been watching like three rows in front of us. This guy, obviously not there on a date, but there with family, and he whips out his cell phone and he starts texting during the movie. And I don't blame him. I mean, he and I were not the target audience of this movie. And even Dawn was like, you know, even for a chick flick, that was pretty awful. So Usher comes up. I mean, he had just started texting. Usher comes up and goes, excuse me, sir, I'm going to have to ask you to put that away or leave the theater. And I just see him stand up and go, well, I'm
bye.
Not. He just stands up and goes, well, I'm not putting it away. Sorry, honey, they're kicking me out. And he just, big smile on his face as he walks down the aisle and is like, I'm going to go play arcade games while they finish the movie. And I'm like, all right, time to whip out the iPod Touch. And I had I Gotta Pee out and a couple other, you know, little games. And I'm sitting there and I'm doing that. Here comes the usher, and he comes up, and he goes, excuse me, sir, I'm going to have you put that away, or I'm going to have to ask you to leave the theater. And I look over at Dawn, and she just looks over at me, grabs my iPod Touch, and throws it on the ground.
Did you break it?
Yeah, that's you've got it now. It's got the big
crack. Oh, the one with the big crack in the screen. Yeah.
She just grabs it, throws it on the ground. She's like, no, motherfucker, if I'm going to sit through this, so are you.
I'm of the mind, if I paid for a movie, I'm going to watch it, even if it's bad. I have made one exception to that, and that was Star Trek V. And you know how big of a Star Trek fan I am, so that tells you how bad Star Trek V was in its theatrical run.
I still have not
that I left yeah. that movie.
I'm trying to think of a movie. There's been one or two movies that I walked out on, but I forget what they were.
I fell asleep during Lord of the Rings movie, but it doesn't count walking out.
That's right.
I still woke up and finished the movie, but right. I missed a good hour in the middle because I was just, I'm not a Lord of the Rings fan. I was bored out of my fucking skull in that movie.
There have been movies that I've slept with. I got to tell you the truth. That was one of the joys of the drive-in was the shitty movie. Because you go, you pay a reduced price. It's a shitty movie, but it's a good excuse for a date night. I pick up at the time with stuff in the back and a sleeping bag and stuff like that. And it was fun, even on the times when we didn't do the classic fooling around during the drive-in movie
right.
or fogging up windows or anything. It was still just a good time to be out there. So,
well, let's swing back to marketing now.
Back to marketing. Now, I was talking about the covert marketing,
yeah,
which is the kind that I really like, and it's the kind that I'm really impressed by. And you can find it out there from time to time.
And see, I'm not impressed by it. I'm actually offended by it. Because, like, did you know that larger companies, I'm sure smaller companies don't have this kind of clout yet, but, like, in larger companies like law firms or, ironically enough, movie studios and whatnot, you go to the employee fridge, and there's all of a certain kind of water or a certain kind of soda that they provide you with. Those companies pay that company to put their brand out there.
Well, yeah.
That we want your employees to drink Pepsi.
Sure.
So we want you to discourage the use of Coke in your building. And some companies are starting to do that now, that you cannot bring a bottle of Coke to work because this is a Pepsi company.
Oh, yeah.
That to me is offensive. That is, you are marketing to me and not giving me a choice in the matter anymore.
Right.
That is offensive to me.
See, that's not covert marketing, though. I mean, that's...
But it is, because you don't even notice it until you try and circumvent it.
Yeah. Meh.
You know, in the 90s, back, you know, before the internet killed CDs.
Back when they had Fruitopia?
I don't even think I ever had one.
I miss Fruitopia. That was really good.
Watch Independence Day. They have that big conversation in front of all the Fruitopia machines.
And Orbitz.
Oh, water with little floaty things in it.
Oh, no, you're right. It was awful.
But, you know, you've got ones that it is kind of covert. So back in the 90s, you would have, like, in you know, big metropolitan areas, you know, business districts of downtown New York and L.A. and that, they would actually pay people to walk around blasting the new CD that they want people to, hey, that sounds pretty good. What is that? Or to in the middle of the coffee shop, have people talking about, oh my God, the new Nickelback CD is absolutely phenomenal.
Well, and that, that's not covert marketing. That you know is marketing right there.
You know what I mean, though. And then, ironically enough, that CD is for sale at Starbucks. And that is, you know, they're playing you. And I don't like being played.
See, I don't see that as being played, though. I mean, if I supported a band, you and I start a band called the Critics, and we make a CD and we want to get our name out there, we're going to play coffee shops. We're going to play stuff like that. We're going to want to get our name out there. I'm going to have friends, you know, even, who knows, maybe we would release our Critics single via this podcast and people download it and, you know, hey,
that's
do us
not
a favor
the same thing
it, you know.
As paying someone who may not even like your thing to go into a business and talk about it, hoping it influences someone else. That to me is just duplicitous.
No, that's not duplicitous. That's paying for friends. It's a shame. It kind of makes you look at the company and go, aw, you have to pay people to like you. But it's not duplicitous to me. Anything that gets me to try something new, whether it's music or something like that, I can't look badly upon that. I don't blame them. I would rather that happen than Ronald McDonald show up at my house. Ronald McDonald show up with, you know, the new sandwich at my house and start throwing him, you know, at my garage or whatever. I don't mind stuff like that, especially in coffee shops like Starbucks, I can generally ignore other people's conversations.
Well, how about something then like with the corporatization of America, with fewer and fewer corporations owning more and more media, do you think marketing is getting worse or better? With something, let's just bring up Disney for a second. You got the new Disney movie, which you can market in theaters. You've got the soundtrack to the Disney movie that you can market through their record company. You've got the TV show for that Disney movie that you can market on all of their TV channels that they own. You've got the comic book for that movie that they can market through their comic book company and so forth, that you almost can't avoid certain types of marketing anymore. If you're in the media at all,
right,
it's there. Do you think that's better or worse than it was before? Because to me, it seems like we have more choice now, yet less choice. Does that make any sense?
More choice from fewer providers. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I don't think that's a good thing.
I don't know if it's a good thing. I mean, to me, there's no difference between Disney owning the record company and the comic company and the newspaper and the TV network and stuff like that and marketing their product to you versus signing a contract with the owners of the TV and the comic company and marketing their product to you. I don't think it's any better or worse. I think it's just a fact of life.
Well, then what about marketing ideas? And I don't necessarily mean ideas like, hey, I've got a new concept for something. I mean ideas like Rupert Murdoch's companies, that you're marketing a Republican strategy on our news channel and all of our newspapers, and we're going to market this to you, even if what it is simply an ideal that we know you don't follow. We want you to, but we know you don't. Do you think that's dangerous, especially when it comes to something like politics, marketing an ideal like that? Or is that what politics is trying to market ideals?
That's exactly what politics is. I think marketing ideas...
I think it's dangerous with the Murdoch stuff.
Listen,
though.
I think it's extremely dangerous with the stuff I don't agree with. Because I don't agree with it. I think it's dangerous, period, end of story. But I think the one thing that we have today that we didn't have in the 90s, and the one thing that we have today that really, I was terribly frightened when, you know, we talk about the big six. Six companies that own everything that markets to you.
Right.
In every form of media. And four of them are extremely conservative companies. Two of them are extremely liberal companies. You didn't have a balance there, and I was scared about that. And then the internet started being used for what it's used for now, and social media popped up. And I think that even though there is that balance out there where you can get that other side, I think the danger that I see now is that people through social media and through these places where they could get balance and where they could get both sides of the story, instead choose to isolate themselves in their own little happy bubble. Conservatives have this little conservative bubble that, you know, they like pages like the Tea Party, and they like pages like, you know, pro-life stuff and the things that they agree with, and don't pay attention to or don't get exposed to the other side, and vice versa. You've got the liberal people that
yes.
like their stuff and don't get exposed to the other side. I think that more and more of that kind of a balance is falling on the shoulders of the individual. And I don't see the individual as a whole, not just in the U.S., but in the world, following through.
But what about lack of options? For instance, going back to the Murdoch. Now, this isn't so as much of a problem here in America as it is overseas and in the U.K. and in Australia, especially, where Murdoch owns, I think it's 80% of all media, that you don't have an alternative, that every newspaper you buy is telling you the same thing. Every channel you want to watch is telling you the same thing. You don't have an alternative voice. And even when you think you do, you find out that through a subsidiary of a subsidiary of subsidiary, it's still owned by Rupert Murdoch.
And I think that the one thing that I will waive right now is the free and clear internet. And that's why I think having a free and clear internet is so important. It's the one last place where we have a choice and we make the choice.
Because I know, you know, I'm really anti-Disney.
Right.
And especially with where they are right now, as a fan of genre, whether it be comics, whatever, you almost can't give Disney money if you want to do anything in the genre. Because they, you know, you find out, hey, this comic I love, oh, shit, it's owned by Disney through
Marvel.
Three subsidiaries. Oh, this CD I like. Shit, it's owned through their record company. This movie. Oh, it's owned through a company that they own from a company that they
sure.
own. You know, it's a Miramax, so that's owned through them, and Dimensions from Miramax. And, you know, it's like you can't not give Disney money if you want to do anything in the business anymore.
Right.
That sickens me a little bit that there aren't alternatives, or you have to go so far out of the mainstream that you're on another fucking planet.
And that's where I think that I see that changing. I really do. I see
it changing too, but for the worse, because look at Disney consolidating.
See, I see Disney consolidating and all of that. And that to me, we're on the verge of a major Hollywood collapse.
Oh, hell yeah.
I mean, big Hollywood movies are too expensive to make. The video camera has, you know, with digital production and digital distribution,
the red.
It has really made it, democratized it. Music, the music industry, it's not going to fall apart tomorrow, but I give it less than 20 years unless it goes through a major change. And I think we're on the verge of
now,
that Hollywood change too.
For music, do you mean music or the marketing and selling of music?
I mean the music industry. I see the RIAA falling apart. I see...
Well, the RIAA is a thug organization,
right,
anyway.
Right, but I see the recording industry as we have known it for the last years falling apart. And I see Hollywood on the brink of that.
Oh, Hollywood's already on that precipice. I mean, as much as people took issue with the who made the message, when it's Spielberg and Lucas saying movies have gotten too expensive and too grandiose, you kind of go, that's kind of like your crack dealer coming up, dude, you really got a drug problem.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so the messenger kind of lost the message.
Or the
casino. But the message was still apt, even though, you know, it was like when James Cameron said, there's too many 3D movies nowadays. You go, really?
Yeah.
You?
Yeah.
You are the one bitching about too much 3D.
You know, I see the point, but I think that we're on the verge of a major change, and I'm looking forward to it.
Well, if it's marketed right, it won't be a disaster.
That's
there
right.
We go. I tied that back in.
And I think that this whole idea of media by the people needs good marketing. And I mean, you've got funding agencies out there now like Kickstarter and you know, others that are helping. You've got cheaper equipment that's helping. You've got easier distribution that's helping a lot. And it all has to do with the free and clear internet.
Which is one of the reasons that the companies don't want that.
Right.
Which is why most of the companies endorsed SOPA and CISPA.
Which is
and endorse NSA spying.
It's why people that listen to this program need to talk to their friends that don't listen to this program.
Are you marketing right now?
I'm marketing the idea of a free and clear internet right now.
Well, should we market 1201beyond.com?
Please do.
That's where 1201beyond.com is where you can find this show, all my other shows. Scott can be found also writing a column over at geekjuicemedia.com.
No, I'm not writing that column anymore.
Why not?
Some issues came up.
Okay, you want to go into them?
No, I don't, because I'm dealing with them.
Okay.
But some issues came up, and Set Phasers Disc X is on hiatus, and yeah.
Okay, well, you can still find the couple that you did write.
Still find the couple that I did
write
at Geek Juice Media. And I do some other stuff at Geek Juice Media from time to time. And
like I said, 1201beyond.com. I'm trying to expand my brand.
Exactly.
That's my brand.
Exactly.
And if I ever get any money, I plan to hire you.
Eventually.
It'd be so cool to have you as an employee and me being your boss. You'd hate that, wouldn't you?
I wouldn't come in as an employee. I wouldn't come in as a partner, but not an employee.
Oh, wah.
But nonetheless.
So we got a couple of minutes.
Anything
more you want to say on marketing?
Tell us. Get involved on the Facebook page on facebook.com/lostinthestatic.
90% of those are Scott.
Yeah, but tell us, you know, your good and bad ideas of marketing and how, you know, were there any times when you were fooled? You know, you went to check out this new conspiracy theory and suddenly it said Disney's Doctor Who. The Doctor becomes an American or whatever, you know. And
actually, Fox had the American rights to Doctor Who because they made that Fox TV movie in 96,
Disney. But Disney's been playing with the idea and they've been trying to buy the rights to make a new American Doctor Who all Disney-fied.
Oh, yeah, they've been threatening that movie for years.
Oh, yeah. But nonetheless, you know, good experiences with marketing, bad experiences with marketing, examples of good marketing, examples of bad marketing. I would love to hear about your experiences on our Facebook page.
Lost in the Static.
Facebook.com/LostInTheStatic.
And you can find both Scott and I there. I still don't have Twitter because I'm still being bullied.
Fake You has Twitter.
I hate Fake Me.
Fake You is hilarious. I like Fake You.
Fake Alternate Universe Me, as Brad Jones puts it.
Yeah, I like Alternate Universe Josh. And he does have bad taste in TV.
And music and ideals. And I don't know why Fake Me decided to go redneck. That was so weird that Fake Me's a redneck.
Yeah, it's a little bit weird. But nonetheless, here's one last little bit of marketing. Thanks for joining us, guys. We'll see you guys next week.
Lost in the Static is a 1201 Beyond production. Visit 1201beyond.com for more great shows.